This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
On the Billiken Sports Network from Learfield, this is the Billiken Coaches Show, presented by Edward Jones. Edward Jones is a proud sponsor of Billiken Athletics. Also brought to you by Royal Banks of Missouri, the community bank for your community. Now, here's your host, the voice of the Billikens, Bob Ramsey.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome. Glad you're with us this evening at Westport Social for the Billiken Coaches Show. Now we're all set. Josh Schertz is here. I am Bob Ramsey, and glad you're with us. Coach, it's good to see you this evening. How are you?
I'm doing good, Rammer. How are you?
I'm doing very well. We've got a lot to talk about as the regular season ends. The third stage of college basketball begins. It's already begun in other parts of the country.
We're good.
Go like this and pull that tight. Go like this. There we go. And then there you go.
There we go. Now I'm feeling better.
There you go. So
whoever had that, I got a huge head. So whoever had this had a massive head, because it doesn't fit me. There's not many heads bigger than mine. So I don't know who that was, but they have to have a jumbo.
Earl?
Oh.
You and Earl. See?
Oh, see, Earl's head.
All right.
Hopefully Earl's not listening. So hopefully Earl's not tuned in.
That's okay.
To do.
That's okay. So for this is the time of year for college basketball fans.
Yeah.
Now we'll get into our final regular season games in a moment, but the Missouri Valley tournament was here. Ohio Valley champion, a local team, Southern Illinois, Edwardsville. I'm a nerd. I can't help it, Coach. I went to a high school game on Friday night. A great game between Vianney and St. Mary's, two of the best guards in the metro area, two of the best in the Midwest.
No question.
Playing against each other in a great basketball game. So this is the time of year if you love college or any kind of basketball.
Absolutely. There's nothing beats, March Madness. I think it's the best, sporting time in the entire calendar year.
Yeah.
I'm a little biased, but I really believe that. It was so good. Brian Barone at SIUE is a good friend of mine. I've known Brian.
Is that right?
Yeah, we've been friends for, I don't know, 20 years.
Oh, wow.
And he came to practice a bunch this summer and fall, and we talked a couple times on the phone, and he sent me a great text after the game, just thanking me, which I had nothing to do with anything that they did, but sent me a really nice text. And of course, Ben and I at Drake, talk regularly, and so we were connecting as we went into the tournament, and it was great to see them win. Of course,
did you and Ben McCollum have a relationship going back from his Division II time?
We've been great friends going back for we probably talk once or twice a week.
Oh wow!
Yeah, so Ben and I have been super close for about 10 years.
And that's great.
I didn't see it, but I think the Dispatch did a story on us. Our friendship. I know they interviewed me, interviewed him, I think, and goes back to our relationship, which, like I said, dates back, 10 years or so, and
yeah,
to our time in D2. And it's always nice to have guys like Ben, Dusty May, where guys that you talk to regularly that are head coaches aren't in your program. You bounce stuff off. They have a different perspective, but they sit in the same chair, mm-hmm. have a lot of the same issues,
responsibilities,
yeah. lot of the same decisions. You can bounce ideas off them, and certainly that I've been very lucky to have some great friends. But it was great to see those guys. See Brian win and see Ben win. It was awesome to have so many of, we had a lot of Sycamore fans in town. So, we had them at practice on Thursday,
uh-huh.
and went to dinner with a bunch of people Thursday night. And then, they were around Friday, Indiana State practice at our facility in St. Louis. We weren't here because we were delayed in Dayton.
Mm-hmm.
But they came in and practiced here Wednesday. And we obviously gave them run of the place on Wednesday. So it was great to have a lot of people around. Love the Valley Tournament. Love the OVC Tournament. I agree with you. This is the best time of year where you're seeing guys. Lenny Acuff, who just won it. Lipscomb was a guy I've known for forever, a D2 wow. guy as well. So a lot of friends having a lot of success, and you take great pride in that for them.
So we talk a lot on this show, as it turns out, not intentionally, but about the connections in the game. Talk about your staff and how the connections pull a staff together. So, but let me ask you this, because I don't recall if we ever talked about this. And your experience in the game is a little bit different than some others. Did you have a specific mentor as you kind of came into the game and started to climb the ranks?
I didn't have when I started. I went out to, I think I told you, I went out, when I first knew I wanted to coach, I went out to Utah and went out to Utah and watched Coach and shadowed Coach Majerus out there for the entire summer. Had an amazing time. He was somebody that I really admire, and I never really got to spend any time with him. It was just from
observing.
Afar observing him.
Yeah.
And was incredibly impressed. As I got into coaching, I worked for some really good coaches. Worked for Kevin Bilderman at Florida Atlantic, and then I worked for Andy Russo at Lynn, and I worked for Bart Lundy, who's
a
coach.
Wait. You worked for Andy Russo?
Oh, yeah.
No way.
Yeah,
we've got
Louisiana Tech and
Washington. He was my guy at Louisiana Tech I was there.
Andy, I worked for at Lynn.
Unbelievable
for
2 years. Guy.
Yeah, I'm still in touch with Andy to this day. He lives in Boca.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course, yeah. So I worked for Andy for 2 years at Lynn.
Coach, to catch up, because we just started – so when early in my career, I was at Louisiana Tech when Carl Malone was there and Andy Russo was the coach. And so, so I'm doing men and women's games. And so one of the all-time great women's coaches, Kim Mulkey,
yes.
was our point guard
mm-hmm.
when I was there. So I'm doing games for Kim Mulkey and Carl Malone and Andy Russo. And it's, wow, that is amazing
yeah.
that you and Andy are close.
Yeah, Andy.
I got to call him now and let
yeah.
him. Yeah.
Andy hired me as a, coming out of, I worked 1 year at Florida Atlantic. We got fired. Andy hired me at Lynn. I spent 2 years with Andy at Lynn. And then I got hired at Queens and I went and worked for Bart. And then we got to High Point. I spent 7 years there. So I had coaches that I worked for that were really good. And then, when I got into coaching, I've always been somebody who studies. And these relationships just form. I usually find myself associating with other people that are, pretty basketball obsessed, pretty nerdy. And
yeah,
so,
yeah.
Guys like Dusty May, guys like Ben McCollum,
right.
Mark Dagnall in the NBA. I mean, Martin Schiller overseas. I mean, I have coaches in Europe and NBA head coaches and college head coaches. And just this wide array of people that I talk to about different things. And but the guys I talk to the most often are guys like Dusty, certainly Ben.
Yeah.
Ryan Pinone at Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
We have these really close relationships, but it's so good to have people you respect, trust, that are friends of yours. And that kind of evolved over time. And like I said, just associating with, I'm pretty nerdy and pretty basketball obsessed. And then, those guys are wired very much the same way. So there's a commonality. Ben's, studying all the time. Dusty's studying all the time. We're constantly peppering each other with questions. Why'd we do this? Why'd we do that? What were you doing here? What'd you learn? And so it's fun. And now I'm able to. Today, bust Dusty's chops about the Spartan logo thing, and
that's funny.
So yeah, he's That was pretty funny.
That's really funny. One more thing about Andy Russo, and then we'll move on, because I didn't know we were going to talk about this. And you and Natalia and the staff, they don't get to listen to the games. That's good for you. But one of the, my bits, and it is a bit, is hollering that for on a call that goes against us, is that's the worst call I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
I stole that from Russo. Sitting, you know how frequently, you know, the play-by-play guy's right next to where coaches are going. And he would scream at it, that's the worst call I've ever seen. And then I noticed the next game, he used it again. Well, it can't always, you know, it can't always be the worst call.
Maybe but it's that, always one-upped, you that, know, it's always was just slightly worse, but yeah.
That was his thing, and it cracked me up, so I stole it.
And that's how you do it.
It from Andy,
He's a really good guy, and he was, you know, he's married, he had kids late.
Yeah.
I just remember being around him, and you know, he's such an unbelievable dad. And the time he spent, like, he coached our team, you know, we were Division II, Lynn, but he coached his son's, like, youth teams. He eventually left Lynn, coached his daughter in high school. I mean, it's unbelievable. Yeah, I mean, and he and Jackie have stayed down there in Boca Raton. And
Jackie.
You know, and so I kind of grew up, you know, down that way. And so he gave me a great shot, and then has always been really good to me throughout the years as my career has progressed.
That's tremendous. So now I've got another good reason to reach out to Coach Russo.
You should.
He was great. He was great to me because we were two Yankees in the deep south.
Absolutely.
At Louisiana Tech, and so we had to huddle up and have each other's back.
Well, he worked in Ruston, Louisiana, worked in Galveston, I think, you know, Texas. I mean, he came from junior college.
Yeah. Panola, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, he's been in some places, and by the time we worked together, I was probably 23, and he was like 53. He's in his late 70s now.
Yeah.
But he still looks like he's 50. You know, I mean, he's still incredible. I mean, and so.
And he knows pasta.
No, oh, my God, does he know? He knows
for
food.
His family restaurateurs from Chicago.
Yes, absolutely knows it.
He knows that pasta.
Loves his food.
And coached in Italy for a while.
Did coach in Italy for a while. And, that's where I got my my affinity for, like, high-end Italian was Andy Russo.
All right, next year we're going to get him on the show. We'll get him on as a guest.
I would love it.
That is fantastic. All right, let's get back to Billiken basketball. Folks, thanks for indulging Coach Schertz and I kind of going down memory lane. In fact, let's do this. Let's take a break a minute or two early. We'll come back. We'll have a full segment. We'll kind of look at our two last regular season games from last week. And in our final segment, we'll talk about preparation and getting ready for the third part of the season, the conference tournament, and on into March. So stay with us. It's the Billiken Coaches Show. Glad you're with us tonight on KMOX.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Billiken Coaches Show. Now time to talk some Billiken basketball. So, Coach, last week didn't start out so great as the Billikens went to Dayton. Had you ever been to a game in Dayton Arena?
It was so I did when I was at High Point 1 year. I don't really remember it. I think I was like 2000 and maybe 3 or 4.
Yeah.
So it'd been 20. I think Brian Gregory was a coach when I was there.
Oh, yeah.
And so it'd been a long time. But it was quite the experience, unbelievable atmosphere.
They do a great job. And I mentioned on our broadcast, I go, but, you know, going back 39 years ago, when we first started going there, Dayton Arena was starting to get run down.
Yeah.
It was a little dumpy. And to the credit to that program and their boosters and fans, they sunk millions into it. It's a terrific place now.
Terrific place. Unbelievable atmosphere. So loud. They keep it loud the whole game. They have timeouts. I mean, I'm in a timeout late in the game, and I'm trying to, you know, yell at our guys, and I don't think anybody could hear anything I was saying, which is probably good because I don't know they would want to. But, you know, you can't even hear yourself think. It's similar to VCU. Even the timeouts are
loud,
exceptionally loud. Like,
yeah.
There's not a time where, like, it settles
down,
in, you
yeah.
know. And the only time was when we got up, like, 15, and then it got a little quiet in there. But when they made a run, it got super loud. Every time out was super loud. It's a difficult atmosphere to play in. It's exactly the kind of place that if you're a competitor, you love to go because it is hard.
So, yeah, that's exactly right. And so in that game, things were clicking really good in the first half. And we talked about it in the post game, so we don't need to relitigate it all. But then they came out, and you knew they were going to come out and take it up physically a notch. And they did. And that's the thing we've seen a handful of times, not a ton, but being able to match when a team goes up a notch.
Yeah, I thought, you know, we really controlled the first half. We dominated it. You know, really didn't score the last 3 minutes. We had 41 points in the first 17 minutes. And then, you know, they cut it to 13 at halftime. We actually came out in the second half, and I told them, look, these 4 minute wars, the first war is going to really dictate what it is. And, you know, with about 16 minutes to go, we're up 15.
Mm-hmm.
Isaiah hits a three, or maybe 14 or 15. And we put it back up to 15, I believe. And from there, I just, you know, they came out, which you know they're going to do at home, and hit us in the mouth. And, you know, and we didn't do a good job. I thought we got sped up. I thought we got frantic offensively. Didn't play with, you know, when teams are that aggressive and physical, you have to counter that aggressiveness with force. You can't get on your heels because that emboldens them. So whether it's cutting, driving, posting, you know, rolls, you got to be really aggressive attacking the paint. And we got away from that. I thought we got frantic offensively. We got on our heels defensively, got a little loose in defensive trans, had enough breakdowns. And then, you know, they came back and tied it. But then we came back and took a 6-point lead.
Yeah.
At 60-54. And at that point, I'm like, okay, we got hit. We actually weathered the storm. They tied it, and the place was rocking. We came back and took a 6-point lead, and there was 6.5, 7 minutes to go. I was like, we're in great shape.
I thought
to
the same
close
thing.
This out.
Yeah.
And, you know, the next possession, we play a great defensive possession. Cheeks makes a hard three with about 2 seconds on the shot clock, which was you can't guard any better than that. That was just a really good player making a big shot. We come down, miss a layup. Amari gets a layup, misses it. And then, you know, they're coming in transition. They go to pass it. We deflect the ball, go straight up. Our guys collapse trying to get it. Letang gets it, throws it out to Cheeks for another three. Tie game. We come down, score again. to go up to, and then from there the wheels came off. But
those threes kind of really got them going
because, you know, the possession there, if we, you know, games are, you know, there's subtle momentum shifts, and, you know, we go back up six, and we get a stop there, you know, clock's, you know, 6.5 minutes, we're up six with the ball. They make a three, you know, cut it to three, one possession game, we miss a layup. They come down, bang a three on a deflected ball. You know, the game's tied. So, you know, and it moves like that, and the margins are small like that. But, you know, to win there, I think it's, you know, you got to be unbelievably tough, and you got to be unbelievably connected. And it's a place where you gotta want that kind of challenge. And I think our guys did. I don't think we didn't lose because we flinched. We didn't lose because we were, you know, we lost because we weren't. You know, tough enough down the stretch and execute well enough down the stretch. I don't think we lost for any other reason. But it's a place now that you put on there and say, man, you know, that's the kind of place where if you can walk in there and win, you know.
You've done something.
Like I told the guys before the game, you know, this was going to be, if we get it done, a huge culture win. Because that's what it tests. It tests, you know, how mentally tough you are, how connected, how together you are to win in that environment against that good a team. I think ZB had told me before the game, that they've lost 5 home games in 4 years, something like that.
Yeah.
So they very rarely lose there. You could see why. But that's what makes it awesome. That's aspirational for us that, hey, you know, if we know if we can walk in there, walk into a place like VCU and win, those places have unbelievable environments and great teams, which is what makes a place hard to play. You know, if you have a great environment and a bad team, it's not scary at all. And if you got a really good team and a bad environment, you know, that's way harder, but it's the combination of the two things that makes somewhere really difficult to play. And so, you know, I'm looking forward to it. I know it's a ways out, but going back to Dayton next year and having a chance. And, you know, that's a great culture test, a great litmus test for where you are in your toughness, where you are in terms of your connectivity, or how tight-knit you are. And that's, you know, I was proud of a lot of things to do at LMU. One of the coolest things was, you know, we won 27 road games in a row in league. And to win 27, to win, go multiple years without losing on the road, that's a big deal. And that was, you know,
that is
our apex. Yeah, because that's how you test yourself.
Yeah, so you talk about being good, being great atmosphere. You got that on Saturday. Taking away turnovers, we'll get to that in a second. When you didn't turn the ball over Saturday against Duquesne, I felt the offense really clicked.
Agreed. Yeah. I mean, to shoot, you know, I think we shot 59% for the game against them. I mean, they're a good defense, top 5 defense in the A-10. When we didn't give it to them, you know, we actually offensively ran some good stuff. I thought the ball moved. Thought we played with really good force. The ball got to the rim repeatedly. And whether that was cutting, posting, drives. We didn't shoot we shot enough threes. I think, you know, made
a dozen.
Yeah. So made a dozen out of what, 29?
27.
27.
Yeah.
So that's
44%.
A good percent. Yeah. We'll take that. But, you know, at the end of the day, I thought our force was good. I thought we shared the ball, 21 assists. You know, the ball moved, ball hopped. We generated good looks for one another. You know, I was pleased with the level we played at, you know, from an offensive standpoint outside of the turnovers. And that's been the thing all year. You know, you look at, you know, we're number one in the league in field goal percentage. We're number one in the league in effective field goal percentage. But we're 15th in turnover rate, which is, you know, obviously we're the worst in the league. And so that's the thing holding us back from really being, you know, I think we wound up finishing 6th in the league in offensive rating and 3rd in the league in defensive rating. And the thing holding us back from being first in both, you know, turnover percentage, we didn't force enough turnovers. And we certainly offensively turned the ball over too much.
Too much. Too much. Tell fans what effective field goal percentage is.
So effective field goal percentage is different than field goal percentage because it accounts for threes being worth threes and twos being worth two. And so when you look at somebody's effective field goal percentage, because you could say, well, you know, we shot 44% from three. Well, you know, if you just look and if you shot nothing but threes and shot 44%, people say, well, that's not a very good shooting day. But if you look at the points per shot, that's what it is. And so what it does is basically gives you, which is how we rate our players offensively, is points per shot. You know, I mean, so we look at that. That's your efficiency level, right? If you take, you know, score 20 points, it takes you 22 shots.
That's not a great day.
No, but if you're scoring 20 on 12 shots, and that's, you know, how you get the line, utilizing threes. So we finished in the league number one in offensive effective field goal percentage, number two in defensive effective field goal percentage. You know, we were one of the better. And, again, we finished third in the league in defensive rating, which is points per 100 possessions. We finished sixth in the league in offensive rating. So we did some good things. But, you know, the area that we got to grow in, we've got to take better care of the ball. And then we've got to be more disruptive. And part of that is, you know, our depth or lack thereof. You know, I think guys a little bit are worried about fouls and worried about, you know, really selling out. And we ask so much of them offensively to move.
Right.
That we're maybe not as disruptive as we want to be defensively. But I think that's something that as we get in the tournament, you know, the games are one of the margins. And it's those small margin plays, you know, turnover rate.
Yeah.
Forcing turnovers, defensive rebounding rate, offensive rebounding rate. Those small margins are what drives winning when you get to elimination time.
I hopefully we know each other well enough now that you can tell me when I'm dead wrong on something and it won't hurt my feelings, because I just love learning the game anyway. And hopefully I'm representing the fans on the show to listen and learn. I feel like sometimes when we're having a game with multiple turnovers, that too many of them, the word I would use, and it made me think of it when you talked about being physical and the energy and all that stuff, is passive.
Yes.
Some passive passes or cuts or things. Am I on to something with that?
Yeah, I think a lot of our turnovers are, you know, I would say, you know, we struggle to, we call it being ball tough. You know, we at times are not ball tough. And look, I mean, the preponderance of turnovers are Robbie and Isaiah. They also handle the ball.
All the time.
The preponderance of time. So,
yeah.
You know, with Isaiah, sometimes Robbie has got to be strong with the ball. There's no question. That's the majority of his turnovers are, you know, the physicality and you know, being really, really ball tough, snapping passes off, handling double teams, handling smaller guys and dribbling them down. He'd gotten better. I thought he'd been better the last six or seven games.
I agree.
Not turning it over. And he had 10 on Saturday. Now, you know, there was two or three where I actually thought he made some good passes where guys didn't catch him, and he got dinged for those turnovers, and that's fine. With Isaiah, I think there's a combination of, you know, I always say, like, you know, I live my life like, you know, I always – Isaiah loves degree of difficulty. You know, I love degree of simplicity.
Yes.
And he and I butt heads because he is obsessed with degree of difficulty. And if they start giving out more points for that in games, I'll be with him. If they said, hey, you know, this pass is so difficult, we're going to give you 5 points if you complete it. You know,
that's
and,
great.
And so I try to get him to be more simple and just make easier plays for himself. And so a lot of his stuff is, you know, we call it hitting singles. He loves to hit home runs. And so, you know, there was a couple plays in that game where, you know, he had, you know, we're running some high pick and rolls with him and Robbie based on the coverage they were giving us. And I thought in the first half and the early second half, they were putting two to the ball and he was holding on to it. And Rob's wide open. And if you get the ball, Rob, there, one, he's going to make that shot a lot of times. And two, if he doesn't, he's going to be able to play to the next side. And once you put two to the ball, you got to get off it.
Right.
And now, to his credit, down the stretch, he made those plays. And the play he made at the end to close the game was fantastic.
That's what I was – exactly the play I was going to bring up. Because we're going to – everybody knows about the threes. We've seen the highlights. Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Clutch genes. You've talked about that. All those things. But that last play where he came down the lane and on the air, I said he gave him the okey-doke.
Yep.
He leaned in, kind of spun back, and like a no-look back as good a play as you can make in a game in that moment.
Well, you know, we talk a lot about being disciplined at the end of drives, right? And he has a tendency to play off 1 foot, and he's small. And when you go in and you drive and you get to the end of a drive and you play off 1 foot and you jump, man, you know, you're putting yourself in unless you have space, you're putting yourself, you know, what Earl and I talk about,
you're
this
begging
in the air
for trouble.
Yeah, because you're going to get your shot blocked. You're going to turn the ball over. You're going to get yourself where you got to make a decision late. So, you know, the game is putting, you know, pressure on the rim, but then being disciplined at the end of your drives to be able to play off 2 feet that allows you. So we ran a high pick and roll. We ran, you know, we call flat with Rob and Isaiah. And we spaced the floor with three guys low in the corner, try to put the defense in a quandary. And, you know, originally the big didn't help. And Isaiah got downhill and he thought he was going to get a layup and they cut him off. And to his credit, he played off 2 feet. He pivoted. He was searching for an angle. Didn't have the angle. And then the big, for whatever reason, as he was pivoting, sunk down to help. Wilburn did.
Yep.
And as he pivoted, he turned and saw, and he threw it right out to Robbie. And now Robbie's shooting a paint to great, you know, paint touch to a spot three. And outside of offensive rebounds, those are the highest value threes in the game. That's what we're hunting. And it was a great play at the end of the game. You know, we obviously showed the guys today in film, you know, the value of discipline, you know, and being disciplined at the end of your drives. That every, the game is about getting the ball to the rim, but then it's getting the ball to the rim is one aspect. Being disciplined at the end of your drive so you can make the right read is another aspect. And then the ability to actively space to a, to if you're one of the four guys, you know, in the game, are you making the read for your teammate as easy as possible? Are you getting into a window where
he can
see you?
Find you, yeah.
Right. And so that's maybe there's a cut. Is it so? Are we call that active spacing, finding windows where the play. So it's all those things in concert. It's getting the ball to the rim, figuring out how to do that, and then once you do that, you know, being able to play off 2 feet, and being disciplined at the end of that, and then the other four guys actively spacing and looking to cut gaps in the shell to make the reads as simple for their teammate as possible. And it's all those things working in concert. That last play was a good example of that.
Explain what you meant by the highest value three when you said paint to great.
So in basketball, the number one, the highest value three, which means the one that goes in the most, is offensive rebound threes. And the reason that...
Is that right?
Yeah. The reason is because when you get an offensive rebound, generally the ball's in the paint, people are... You know, all around, and it creates a broken floor. So, like a guy like Gibson Jimerson, who you would never leave open in a regular scenario,
he might be in that
wide open, or you know, so
yeah.
So the highest value in terms of made threes is an offensive rebound three. The second highest is where the ball gets to the paint, and then they throw it out to the second side, and that guy is shooting a catch and shoot with his feet set. That's the second highest value three because that's how everybody learns to shoot, right?
Right.
I mean, when you go and you learn to shoot, somebody rebounds for you, they throw the ball in the paint, you spot threes. Now you can add to that, but the highest value threes, you know, offensive rebound, the second is we call it paint to great, where the ball touches the paint, the defense collapses, and you spray it out to your teammate. And now that guy is shooting a three that's coming from the paint. He's just stepping in and like he's done, you know, hundreds of thousands of times before, stepping into a wide open spot three. And we hunt those layups, free throws, and those spot threes are what we're always hunting.
One more thing before we go to a break, and we're not in a hurry to get there, but I just want to say before we get to talking about the tournament, which is everybody is appropriately excited about, Gibson Jimerson's career high 35 on senior night. Tie those two things together. He's in his last three games, he's averaging 30. No one in the program's history has ever been hotter.
Yep.
I've seen them all, Coach.
Yeah.
My first year was before – my first year was when the three-point line came in
right
here at SLU. I've seen every guy.
Yep.
No one's been hotter than he is right now. And then translate that to senior night and how that all comes together.
You know, I you always worry senior night for the seniors because I think there's a big difference in, you know, playing – with emotion and playing emotional, you know, and playing with emotion is great. Playing emotional is not good because nobody makes good decisions when they're emotional. So you worry with the seniors, particularly a guy like Gibb, who's been here so long. And I know this place means so much to him. I thought it was going to go one way or the other. It wouldn't like I was like, he's going to play great or he's going to just be awful because he's going to be so emotional and he's going to try so hard and he's going to squeeze so tight that he's going to just, you know, because you can always say, you know, hold it with open hands. You know, like don't squeeze things too tight because if you do, you know, you're going to wind up losing them, right? You know,
yep, and so, squirt away.
And so I think, you know, he was awesome. I agree with you. He's playing at a remarkably high level. And it's not just, you know, the 35 points is awesome. The threes have been amazing. Those are the loudest things. But he's doing so many other things. You know, he's hitting seams, coming off. You know, we talk about gravity. When he comes off a dribble handoff or any kind of action, you know, two guys are generally coming at him, and he's got really good at recognizing that and just throwing the ball to his teammate who slips into the, we call it the seam.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're playing 4-on-3. And now that guy's coming downhill, and now it's his responsibility to make the right reads and react in space. And but Gibson's not getting assists for that, but he's creating that.
He's creating gravity.
Just like Robbie's post-ups create help. A lot of times he throws it out and then they make the one more. He gets no statistical benefit of that, but that all starts with him. his gravity, his ability to post up and score draws two, and now we're playing advantage basketball behind that, right? So Gibbs been great there. His defense has improved measurably. His rebounding,
He led the team with eight rebounds.
Yeah, I mean, he gets down there, and the guards have an advantage because the bigs are usually boxing out. And Robbie was boxing out 25, who ranked number one in the country in offensive rebounding rate. So he's the number one offensive rebounder in the nation by percentage. Robbie's engaged with him. You know, those other guys are engaged. And Gibson's coming down, flying down, and grabbing those rebounds, doing a great job of that. His floor game has just been so good.
Amazing.
And, you know, I know there was a point where people, he was struggling, and people were like, well, you know, it's is he tired? And, you know, I never thought that. I always think Woodard finds this level. And I thought, man, you know, he was shooting whatever it was, 20-some percent from three in league play. And this guy's a 40% three-point shooter on high volume, which makes him an elite shooter because he shooting 40% on low volume is fine. It's great. But when you can do it on high volume and everybody's trying to take it away.
Triple-digit makes.
Yes, 103 makes so far. He's shooting off movement. Everybody's game plan at the top of it is, you know, don't let Gibson Jimerson shoot threes. So everybody is selling out to take it away. So when you're getting him, you know, that's just a credit to how much he's moving, how good he is. You know, and so it's just like, I thought, man, you know, there's a chance that, you know, if Woodard really finds this level, he's going to have an incredible, you know, stretch here and finish down the stretch. And I think he's, you know, like you said, he's playing unbelievably well. I think he's got a chance here in D.C. To put an unbelievably special, you know, we talk a lot about legacy as a player, legacy as a team is always how you finish. That's what everybody remembers. Mm-hmm. You know, people tend to forget the beginning and the middle of stories, but everybody always remembers, you know, how a group finishes, and that's your legacy as a player, and that's your legacy as a team. This team's legacy will be, you know, what we do here at the end. And when I was at LMU, I talked about it a lot with our team. You know, we'd win the regular season championship often, which is great, and I would tell them, whatever happens from here, it's been a great season. Nothing that can happen here will change that. That's the biggest test of a team is a regular season gauntlet. But I would always tell them it can't be a special season unless you perform in the postseason. And it can be a great season, but it can't be special. And that's what our team last year in Indiana State, I told them the same thing. I said, hey, we had a great season. But now, unless, you know, we go ballot in the first round. So it can't be a special season unless you perform when it matters most. And that's, I think he's got a chance to capstone this in a really special way in D.C.
That's Josh Schertz. When we come back, we're going to talk about D.C. and tournament prep. This is the Billiken Coaches Show on KMOX. Back on the Billiken Coaches Show, Josh Schertz is with us this evening. And so you come off, Coach, the end of the regular season, terrific overtime win. Crowd's crazy. It's all great. Senior night, that's all great. Take yesterday off, and then it's time to get to work today.
Yep.
Talk about the topics, the things that you did. I assume you looked at film and got on the court.
Yep.
Tell me about, you know, what the context of everything you did today was.
So we, you know, we had our guys in. We came in. We watched film at 11. And for about 45 minutes, you know, just watched individual film. Then we had a team film session. So we clipped stuff for guys individually. They get with their coaches from like 11:20. Then we watched film as a group till about 11:45. And then guys went in. Today we did a little bit different because it's spring break, so we don't have classes, which is nice.
Oh, coaches love no classes.
No classes. So we divided up in half, and we had half go lift, half went on the court for a skill development workout. And then about 35, 40 minutes later, they flipped. So everybody got a weight session in and an individual skill session with the coaches. And then we practiced for about 55 minutes to an hour, you know, just the whole team together. So we were in there from about 11 to about, you know, 2:30 or so with everything together.
Practicing what you do, not worried about game plan yet.
We build it in. We don't tell them, but like we did a segment of, you know, where we did like we call it perfect shell. We went about 12 minutes and we did some, you know, like the scout team goes out and they run and they ran some Davidson and some Richmond concepts in that segment. We'll do that again tomorrow where we just guard both. You know, we're well aware of, you know, what we obviously played Davidson recently.
Yeah.
And kind of the challenges they bring. Richmond's been longer, but, you know, you're certainly going to look at, all right, you know, just take Richmond. They switch a lot off the ball. We got to be prepared to attack that. let's drill that here in the next couple of days, because we want to make sure we're good there. You know, Davidson does a nice job. You know, they got the best, you know, score in the league in Reed Bailey. So we got to be great in terms of how we're guarding the post and getting arrested.
And you did a great job on it last time.
Yeah, Kalu and Amari were fantastic. You know, they run some gaggles. They do a lot of off-ball motion stuff. So we got to be great there. And so there's some checklist things. But I think the overarching thing is, you know, you don't want to go too long. But you want to make sure that you're getting all the high bars. We played a lot. As soon as we did a couple different things, and then the last, you know, 20 minutes or so, we got up and down.
Yeah.
And we competed. And we played a lot of 5-on-5, even though, you know, numbers are down, you know, but we're able to, you know, with the walk-ons, have enough to go 5-on-5. And we want guys to get repetitions. You got to make sure. That's one thing we do all year, you know, is we play all year long. Because I think with our system, you know, such a concept-based system, it's like anything. You know, the more you do it, the better you get at it, the better your reads become. I think you got to maintain your conditioning. You got to maintain your rhythm. Some coaches get worried about, you know, injuries, stuff like that this late in the year. To me, like, you can live your whole life scared of, like, what if somebody gets hurt? But they get hurt in a game. Or I think you're actually more likely to get hurt if you don't do anything. You get into a game and it's like, oh, my God, wait, this is not a walkthrough. This is real. We're hitting bodies and people are diving and they're mm-hmm. elbowing me and doing stuff. And I'm used to the
soft.
The walkthrough. Yeah. And, you know. And so I think practice is where you build your toughness. It's where you build your habits. It's where you build your connectivity. Everything happens in practice. And when people talk about, you know, the injuries have been difficult in a lot of ways, but the most difficult way has been practice. And by far the most impactful way has been practice.
Well, here goes people. I know listeners are already going, oh, here goes Rammer again on coaching philosophy. Third season of the year, mm-hmm. as you get into postseason play.
Correct.
Do you actively address that with players? Here's what it's going to take. Or do you say, no, we just go through our process and trust our process that we've had all year?
You know, it's a little bit of both. I think, you know, I look at the year, everybody has, you know, four seasons. So, you know, to me, when that buzzer goes off, whenever our last game's played, hopefully for many weeks from now, we slide into what I call the get-ready phase. And that's the guys that are returning, making improvements. Where do they got to get better? Where can we improve their game? What can we do to help raise their level? Where do they got to get to make a jump or jumps? And then as we get into the summer, that kind of continues. We do it a little bit as a team. When we come back in August, we start what I call transformation season. And that's where you go from this group of individuals that are really not a connected team, and you start trying to create the identity. How do you want to play? What do you want to do defensively? What do you want to do offensively? What's our identity going to be? How do we build team? And that transformation phase, the practices are all designed to really build that identity, right? And then as you get to November, and you right before your first game, I think you transition into our third season, which I call the primetime phase. And primetime means your practices are designed to get ready for the games. You're playing. And you're constantly invested in your process. How do we learn? You know, it's 1 of 31. Fans put, you know, bigger on it, this 8-10 game. You know, to me, you're trying to get better and learn from every experience. You're trying to win every single game. We try to approach, whether it's Avila or VCU, in the same way in terms of our preparation, our focus, our attention to detail. We want to get the lessons. We want to be process-oriented. We want to learn, apply those lessons for each game and play as well as we can and get better every single time out. As soon as the regular season ended, I told the guys this today, we watch film. We talked about where we can get better. We learned the lessons from that game. That's the last film we'll watch as a team moving forward, because now no one cares about getting better. You know, in this fourth segment, the championship season, you know, what does it matter?
It's winning a game.
I mean, if you don't win to for any game, for us to play any game, we're guaranteed one more game. Anything more than the game Thursday, we got to earn. And if you earn that, then you got to go earn another one, because you don't get to play Saturday if you don't win Friday. And on and on and on it goes. And this is the part of the season where all the things you've done in the get-ready phase, in the transformation phase, in the primetime phase, now has to culminate, come together and say, okay, there is a pressure here to play our best. There is a pressure here for us to consistently play to a standard, to play to our identity, and do it for as much of the 40 minutes as possible. You never have to worry in the championship segment if, man, you know, if a team's going to be ready to play. Everybody's ready to play. Their season's on the line. So you never have to worry about we're going to catch somebody sleeping. No, you won't.
Nope.
You're going to get everybody's best effort, best focus, best detail. Everybody's playing for their lives. So what it does come down to is finding small, you know, little areas in the margins that you can be better at. It comes down to making sure you're executing at the highest level and that the standards and things you've worked on, the habits you've been preaching since June, there is a pressure to play to those. But the key to me is, you know, you can focus on all the external stuff. If we lose, our season's over, yada. But then you're just going to play distracted. It's locking in to play every possession as hard as you possibly can with as much effort and concentration as you can, and everybody lock in to making the next right play. If you make a great play, awesome. Go make the next right one. You make a bad play, great.
Do
sprint
the next
back,
right thing.
Make the next right play.
Yep.
And so we talk a lot about that all season. That's what we want. Play every possession with maximum effort and concentration and physicality and lock in and make the next right play. Awesome. You made a great play. We scored a basket. Fantastic. Sprint back. We had a great defensive possession. Awesome. Rebound. Let's run. Let's go down and transition. And let's make the next right play. And then we do that. Let's come back. And so it's really locking into that. And that's how you find your flow as a player. And that's how you find your flow as a team. That's how you go on long runs in the postseason, is by not focusing on the consequences or what that might be.
We're going to take our final break and come back with a final word from Josh Schertz as we head to the Atlantic 10 tournament. Don't go away. This is the Billiken Coaches Show on KMOX. Back on the Billiken Coaches Show, Josh Schertz. Coach, give us an overarching thought. I know fans will be listening right here on KMOX on Thursday at 1 o'clock, 12:45, the pregame. Overarching thought, because we're also going to have a lot of fans in D.C.
Yeah, I think it's, look, we've had a, it's not been as seamless or as linear as people want. The season, you know, sometimes it can be bumpy. But, you know, I love this group. We have a competitive group. We got a high character group. We got a connected group. Time to buckle up and go try to make a run. We're capable of doing it. So, certainly I know a lot of teams feel that way, but we certainly do. And that's what we're going to do. Try to buckle up, make a run, and see if we can't go win 4 in 4 days and, you know, keep this thing rolling.
It's been done, and it can happen again, and it's going to happen this week. Billikens will leave and head to D.C. tomorrow. Earl and I will be there on Wednesday. And, of course, again, we'll have the action for you. 12:45, the pregame, 1 o'clock the tip, right here on KMOX. For Josh Schertz, our engineer Jim Jackson, I'm Bob Ramsey, and good night from the Billiken Coaches Show.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
If you're thinking about GLP-1s for weight loss, listen up. You must make sure you're maintaining your muscle mass while you're losing weight. Otherwise, you can slow your metabolism and regain the weight. Almacid, a natural superfood protein shake, has been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. It optimizes and supercharges your metabolism so you can lose weight easily. Use Almacid with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at almacid.com. That's almased.com.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. Five times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.